Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from the 10th canto, chapter 27, text 21. Indram nastabhishek shamho.
Indram nastabhishek shamho.
Indram nastabhishek shamho.
Indram nastabhishek shamho.
Brahmana chodita vayam. Brahmana chodita vayam. Avatirno si vishvatman. Avatirno si vishvatman. Bhumir bharapanutaye.
Bhumir
bharapanutaye. Indram natabhishek shamom. Brahmana chodita vayam. Avatirno si vishvatman. Bhumir bharapanutaye. Indram natabhishek shamom. Brahmana chodita vayam. Avatirno si vishvatman. Bhumir bharapanutaye. Please chant. Brahmana chodita vayam. Avatirno si vishvatman. Bhumir bharapanutaye. We shall perform the bathing ceremony of coronation. Brahmana, by Lord Brahma, Jodita. Ordered. Vayam. We. Avatirna. Asi. You have descended. Vishva Atman. O soul of the universe. Bhume. Of the earth. Bara. The burden. Apanutaye. In order to alleviate. Translation and purport by the disciples of A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. As ordered by Lord Brahma, we shall perform your bathing ceremony to coronate you as Indra, O soul of the universe. You descend to this world to relieve the burden of the earth. Please repeat. As ordered by Lord Brahma,
as ordered by Lord Brahma,
we shall perform your bathing ceremony. To coronate you as Indra, O soul of the universe,
you descend to this world
to relieve the burden of the earth. Purport. Sarabhi makes it quite clear in this verse that she has had enough of the leadership of imperfect demigods like Purandar Indra. And now she is determined to directly serve the Supreme Lord. Since Brahma has ordered her, her attempt to coronate Lord Krishna as her personal Lord is authorized by higher authority. Moreover, Lord Krishna himself comes down to earth to relieve the burden of the self-destructive mundane administration. And thus it becomes perfectly consistent with the Lord's own purpose that he becomes the Lord of Sarabhi. Since the Lord rules millions of universes, he can certainly take care of Mother Sarabhi. In fact, Sarabhi wanted to bathe the Lord for her own purification, and she earnestly makes her proposal to Vishvatma, the soul of the universe, Sri Krishna. Om Agana Timaranda Jagananjana Chalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Nama Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yuta Parakamala Sri Guru Vaishnavam Cha Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sagana Raganatam Vitam Tam Sidivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Vrishna Setam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sagana Lalita Sri Vishakam Vitam Sta Hey Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopisha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gorange Radhe Vrindavaneshwere Vishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hare Priye Vanchakalpatrubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhye Vacha Patitanam Bhavanevyo Vaishneva Nama Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadara Shiva Sadi Gaur Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So, we've been hearing a lot about these pastimes of Lord Indra with Krishna, and then now Sarabhi, who is brought from the heavenly planets, is speaking her own prayers and expressing her own heart. So this is very instructive and very wonderful. I thought since we're coming up on Govardhan Puja, would take a few minutes to some time here to speak a little bit and go over the relationship and feelings Krishna and the cows have for each other. We'll be celebrating our Go Puja on Sunday. And I think it's good to keep this perspective. I know some others have already spoken on this, but hopefully this will be a little new perspective. So Krishna, even at a young age, he took He took the calves, took charge of the calves, taking them out to the forest. And then the Gopal Champu, written by Srila Jiva Goswami, he narrates some of these activities. And Krishna went to the forest and he was having the calves eat the grass and drink the water. Krishna and Balaram then inspected all of them. Among the calves, he hugged one of them with his arms to relieve its itching. And touching his forehead to their own forehead, he said, "If you want to go to your mother, I will arrange that." So, with such useless words, he satisfied the calves. So here, Krishna was trying to... He had a very personal relationship with these calves and the cows. And he's speaking to them and expressing his own feelings. And it's further described here, Krishna's feelings. Each cow was like Krishna's life air, situated externally. When the cows were satisfied, Krishna was satisfied. When they were hungry, he experienced hunger. He would bring them close to his chest and smell them with happiness, embrace them, and search for them intensely, and bring them together, feed them, and protect them. This made him appear more splendid. Krishna held the cows as dear as his life, and they became vacant-hearted without him, motionless like pictures, like trees standing all around. When they came to Krishna, they experienced bliss on smelling, hearing, seeing, hearing, tasting, and touching him. What is remarkable is that they were able to experience him externally using their senses. So here we can see Krishna has taken the cows very dearly. And we know that Srila Prabhupada would often speak to those who were not followers of the Sanatana Dharma and ask them to please stop killing the cows. And we can understand, Prabhupada understood very deeply how important the cows were to Krishna. And therefore how great a crime it is, how great an offense it is for someone to kill the cow for his own taste, for his own sustenance, when it's not necessary. Prabhupada would say, at least go kill some lesser animal. Then Krishna would also, as we have heard previously, he would play his flute and have careful, intimate relationships with all the devotees by reciprocating, by blowing his flute. And the wonderful sounds that would come would enchant everyone. So, Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur, in the commentary on the section on the Venu Gita, describes that the Sarabi cows are like Chintamani jewels which fulfill all desires. Their mooing is the most beautiful poetry. Their happy calves are like pleasant summers, and they always lift their ears to hear the sound of Krishna's flute. The calves look over the moving rocks on the calves look like moving rocks on the peaks of Mount Kailash. And as they wander over the earth, they resemble bubbles of milk of the milk ocean, the chuckles of Lord Shiva, or the infant children of the moonlight. There are how many groups of cows? Does anyone know? Should be an easy number to guess. 108, yes. According to their physical characteristics. Their four main colors are red, white, black, and yellow. And each of these has four categories. Each of these four categories has 25 further subdivisions. In addition, there are a further eight qualities like being the color of sandalwood pulp, having a tilak mark on their forehead, being speckled or possessing a head like a mridanga. Each herd has a leader, and when Krishna calls out his name, "Hey, Dabali," a leader of the white cows, the whole group of white cows comes forward. They arrive, and he touches the leader's snout with his soft pinkish hand, and knowing the name of every cow, Govinda counts each herd on a string of 108 jewel beads. If any cows are missing, he calls them with his divine flute, and hearing their names, they bellow in joy and come running. The whitish cows are known by the names of Humsi, Chandini, Ganga, and Mukta. The reddish cows are known by the names of Aruni, Kumkuma, and Saraswati. The blackish ones are known as Shamala, Dumala, and Jamuna. And the yellow ones are known as Pita, Pingala, and Haritaki. Those in the groups with tilak marks are called Chitra, Chitra Tilak, and Durga Tilak. And according to their appearance, other groups are known as Mridanga Mukhi, Simha Mukhi. The beautiful coloring of the cows, their happy disposition, and Sri Krishna's affection for them enlivens the transcendental atmosphere of Vrindavan. In addition to their divine beauty and gentle temperament, all the cows are beautifully bedecked with neck bells. These bells differ from cow to cow by their pitch and tone. And when they walk, their combined sound resembles the congregational kirtan of the Gandharvas. Many cows are adorned with costly blankets embroidered with varying patterns and colors, and their horns are covered with gold or silver and beautified with jewels and pearls. Some cows even have golden ankle bells, while others proudly wear pearl necklaces gifted by Hari. And the bulls are also handsomely decorated. Their horns are covered with gold, and their hooves are decorated with sapphires, and flower garlands hang from their necks. Of the many types of cows, some have short horns, some have long horns, some have high horns, and some have horizontal horns. Others have bent horns, and still others have horns like the antlers of a deer. All in all, the variety exhibited by the herd of Krishna glorifies the ingenuity and inventiveness of a highly artistic creator. The cows that Krishna and his friends take to pasture do not constitute the entire herd of Raja's king. Some of Nanda Maharaj's cows are newly calved, some are older, and some are in season, and some have younger calves, and some have many calves. The cows which Krishna and Balaram take with them have no new calves, for those who have calves stay in the compound at Nandagram and care for their offspring. Still unfit to wander the forest of Raja, these cows stay in touch with Krishna by hearing the far-off vibration of his flute. So we can see incredible variety and wonderful detail, and how Krishna generously decorates his cows. There is another whole Leela of Krishna where he decides he wants to decorate all the cows with pearl necklaces, but he doesn't have enough pearls. So then he convinces his mother to give him all his pearls, and he plants them in the ground. And what happens? Anyone knows what happens? Yeah. Little creepers come out, and they have different beautiful pearls on them. Amazing. And he takes those pearls and decorates the cows. Of course, there's much more to that pastime. But right now we're speaking mainly about the cows. So then one may ask, okay, what is the cow's relationship with Krishna? How do they feel? And this is further described in this section Venu Gita, which we discussed, reviewed a few months ago, maybe. Huh? So, let's see what Krishna says. Prabhupada says, another gopi said to her friends, my dear friends, these cows are also charmed as soon as they hear the transcendental sound of flute of Krishna. It sounds to them like pouring of nectar, and they immediately spread their long ears just to catch the liquid nectar. They don't want even one drop to leak out of the cups of their ears. They're trying to catch that sound. Their ears stand straight up, and they catch that sound with their ears. As for the calves, they are seen with the nipples of their mothers pressed in their mouths, but they cannot suck the milk. They remain struck with devotion, and tears glide down from their eyes, illustrating vividly how they are embracing Krishna heart to heart. And these phenomena indicate that even the cows and calves in Vrindavan knew how to cry for Krishna and embrace him heart to heart. Actually, the perfection of Krishna consciousness can be culminated in the shedding of tears from the eyes. That was Srila Prabhupada's purport. So the gopis go on further to describe this. They say, one gopi says to her friend, these cows have achieved the highest stage of devotional love. They now exhibit the sattvika vikara of stubda, or being stunned. Through the medium of transcendental sound, both the calves and the cows are touching Govinda with great affection. And by their simple devotion, they have superseded the greatest of yogis. So these cows are far more advanced than the greatest yogis who sit for years and years meditating. What you say is certainly correct, added one gopi in appreciation of the spiritual attainment of the cows. Although they are animals, the cows and calves have transcended all bodily designations and have completely forgotten their bodies by absorption in Krishna. Even the baby calves are fully detached from all sensual enjoyment and simply hold their mother's milk in their mouths, and they are not interested in drinking, but are absorbed in the sound of the flute. Giggling as she spoke, one of the gopis said, just see how the milk drips from their mouth to form pools on the ground. The calves show no awareness of what they're doing. So we haven't seen here recently, but when the calf is drinking the milk from the mother, they're very intent. Sometimes even with their head, they push the milk bag to get more milk. And so they're very intent on that. But here, when Krishna's playing the flute, the milk is dripping out of their mouths and they can't suck anymore because they're just so absorbed deeply in that sound of Krishna's flute. Such great devotees they are. Sharing her humor, another girl says, look at the motionless calf. The grass in his mouth is sticking out in all directions. His body trembles with love and he is unable to chew his fodder. Continuing her description, her friend replies, like great mystics, the calves and cows have now taken Krishna within their hearts, and having captured him, they now embrace him to their full satisfaction. Look at the tears of ecstasy flowing from their eyes. When the gopis heard that the cows were embracing Sri Krishna in their hearts, they became very attentive, and they said, how are these cows able to achieve the association of Adhokshaja, whose darshan is rarely achieved even by the goddess of fortune? Riding in this fresh wave of curiosity that swept over the gopis, one young girl replied, in their last lives, these cows and calves were great mystics who had learned the art of drawing Krishna through their eyes into their hearts. Having abducted him in this way, they now forcibly retain Hari within their very beings. So this is an example and an inspiration for us, how we can capture Krishna within our own hearts, simply by meditating on his form and hearing his holy name. We can try to draw him into our hearts and hold him there. just as these cows and calves have done. And the gopis are appreciating this very deeply, the great, highly advanced quality of these cows and calves. So they continue. Full of newfound admiration of the cows, another gopi inquired, "Sri Krishna is not conquered by mere mystic perfection. How have these bewildered animals, Jarapasu, lured Govinda into the recesses of their heart and managed to keep him there?" Her Sakhi, her friend, replied, "When Krishna and Balaram were in the Kumara age, these cows were under their care as young calves. And being of the same age and playful disposition, a close friendship developed with Govinda, which has now matured into a deep parental love that binds Sri Hari with its possessiveness." Her face flushed with happiness, another gopi said, "Dear friend, what you say must certainly be true, for no creature can find satisfaction alone. Yet we see these cows standing motionless, their ears erect, oblivious of everything, and experiencing great happiness. By some mystical art, they have touched Govinda through the vibration of the flute, and now they enjoy the pleasure of his association. From the behavior of these calves, it appears that they have learned this art from their mothers. They too are in bliss." And then the gopis continue to talk of Govinda's association, and their enthusiasm and happiness greatly increased. One slender girl said, "My dear friend, please consider, how is it possible for the cows to embrace Govinda? How can the cows embrace Govinda? Even if they achieve such fortune within their hearts, their anatomy makes such an undertaking physically impossible. This statement is impractical and figurative at best." The gopis envisaged and pictured a picture of Krishna being clumsily embraced by the cows, and clapping their hands, they laughed in happiness. Raising her hand, that girl continued, "However, we cannot dismiss the cow's clear exhibition of ecstatic love. When they draw Krishna into their hearts, the cows and calves must show affection in a natural way." Looking at her friends for emphasis, she concluded, "They fondly rub their heads against Sri Krishna, and they lick his aguru-scented body with their tongues." So we can see that these cows, although it may seem a little, perhaps humorous, trying to picture them trying to embrace Krishna, but actually they were embracing him within their hearts because of their deep, deep love. So this is an exchange, a deep exchange that's going on between Krishna and the cows. And in another account, we can get a vision of what the residents of Vrindavan saw as they saw the cows coming and back into Vrindavan, and how they interacted with Krishna. From Ananda Vrindavan Champu, it says, "The white hue of the pure-minded cows sitting along the road, which looked as white as powdered camphor, easily surpassed the glow of the full moon to create a satisfying sight for all. The beautiful white bodies of these cows could only be distinguished from the lustrous setting by their thick horns, which appeared blacker than a swarm of bumblebees. Sitting there peacefully, the cows felt boundless joy. Desirous to milk the cows, the gopas met with Krishna, who tastefully performs all artistic feats and derives pleasure from all he does. Moving his lotus eyes in all directions, Krishna milked the cows with great fun and affection." The news that Krishna was milking the cows entered the ears of the gopis like a lusty elephant trampling the lotus flowers of their minds. Their minds captivated by Madan Mohan, the gopis ignored their relatives and courageously climbed the watchtowers to see their beloved. One gopi enthusiastically clutched another's hand and pulled her up the stairs. And as the doe-eyed gopis gazed in the direction of Krishna and the cows, the sky filled with the blue lotus flowers of their ardent, loving glances. They bathed their minds in the river of nectar flowing from the moonlight face of Krishna. Like independent yoginis, the curious eyes of the gopis blissfully roamed in all directions as they stood on top of the rooftops, watching Krishna milk the cows. Nothing could prevent their eyes from staring at Krishna. Their eyes tried to milk the nectar from the gorgeous face of their beloved. Though Brahma himself cannot describe this pastime of Krishna milking the cows, and a sparrow can never reach the skies, still this insignificant poet cannot resist the temptation to delight in the transcendental pastimes of Krishna. Therefore, he has tried to glorify them by using the choicest of words. Krishna's turban looked very attractive as it tilted slightly from rubbing against the belly of the cows. Squatting down and holding a golden milk pail between his knees, Krishna looked very enchanting in his glimmering yellow dhoti. While milking the cows, his back arched beautifully and his elbows jutted out to the sides as he squeezed and released the udders with his bud-like fingers. First, Krishna moistened his thumb and forefingers with milk foam, and then he deftly pulled showers of milk from one udder after another. The touch of Krishna's hands felt dearer to the cows than their own calves, and out of affection for the Lord, the cows freely poured forth streams of milk. That forceful pouring of milk made a pleasant sound as it filled the deep milking pot. It spilled out on the ground before a new pot could be brought. As they stood in the watchtowers, glancing restlessly at Krishna, the gopis succumbed to both anxiety and ecstasy. Now that Krishna had sat down in the minds of those desirous gopis, their minds became so heavy that even 1,000 chariots could not drag them away from their beloved Lord. Though shaking in fear of their superiors, the gopis were totally enchanted by the sweet festival of Krishna's beautiful darshan. The mood of awe and reverence could not stand before their spontaneous love for Krishna. Even if the gopis seem hypocritical, they are completely infallible and beyond mistakes. Those gorgeous gopis looked like golden creepers fashioned by an expert goldsmith. Feeling compassion for the maid servants standing beside them in the Chandra Silikas, they shared the joy rising within their hearts by conversing with them. So now they're going to go on and speak about their own problems with cows and how they're going to capture Krishna. Hey Sakhi, listen, the creation of my eyes has attained perfection by the soothing sight of Shyama Sundar. I am relishing the palatable elegance of my Lord, whose ever-youthful dark blue body glows like a fresh rain cloud. My body is tormented with fever due to opposition from the village elders. Still, I want to make my body fit to be controlled by Krishna, who expertly displays the highest perfection in different arts. Just see, even in this condition, my intelligence works nicely. Hey, listen, O playful creepers, in the absence of the bees, the clusters of lotuses lose their joy and luster. Therefore, O best of the beautiful girls, we must now exhibit the strength of our mantra chanting by attracting Krishna into our courtyards. Another Sakhi replied, how can we do that? The first Sakhi replied, listen, I will tell you, in our house, even the strongest girl cannot possibly milk the cows. Even for a fearless person, it is very difficult to control the cows because they are very strong and frisky. But due to our reluctance to milk them, we are not deriving any wealth from their milk products. Therefore, the minds of our superiors, just like our mothers-in-laws and father-in-laws, are burning with grief like the blazing sun. The second Sakhi said, so what does it matter to you? Just ask the guardians why they aren't why they aren't milking the cows and deriving any milk products from them. Advise them to simply call out for Krishna, and when the cows see him, they will automatically surrender their milk. So this is the mood of the gopis towards the cows and Krishna. And it creates a wonderful atmosphere of love and devotion for Krishna and his cows. Then there is another section here, which is, I find, a little quite interesting. In this Gopal Champu, written by Jiva Goswami, commentary on the 10th canto, he gives a slightly different description of this whole pastime after Krishna lifted Govardhan Hill. Reads as follows. Now Indra and Swarga should be described, departing from Vraja, thinking how of his miserable condition, devoid of his powers, he went to his house, but desired his own destruction. He did not desire his wife, and he did not go to the assembly of the devatas. Hearing what happened, Brihaspati came and scolded him in private. Since he was the priest of the devatas, he scolded them as follows. O Indra, because you do not worship Vishnu, you will not flourish, just as the trees cannot grow without the moon. It is not surprising that the intoxication with pride has overcome a person like you, since you are the leader of the devatas and master of intoxication. But how did you, who drank nectar, become like a dead person? You have become insane, giving up life and not eating. The wise say, he who gives fear to the gentle and touches dead bodies should not be touched, like a person who in spite of breathing remains bathing. In spite of bathing remains untouchable. O hero, this has happened just because of your indiscretion. If a person rejects the Antaryami, who is his support, and rejects the Paramatma, who is his protection, he is called insane. Indra said, without thinking I did this act, now please instruct me something suitable. Vyaspati said, when such irregularity occurs, only Brahma can rectify the situation. Your only solution is to follow his advice. Full of grief, Indra went respectfully to Brahma, and without hesitation, he revealed his offense. Brahma said, ah, you are the leader of the devatas, and you are ignorant. Thus you have committed a great offense, which can only be accomplished with great effort. Just on hearing you, on hearing what you have done, such a thing, the wise will block their ears. Having the misfortune of desiring to create the universe, I must instruct you. Desiring to know the Lord's power, you showed audacity. Considering this an intolerably poisonous sin, I am not able to cleanse you of your grave offense. However, Gotama and the others have said, one should tickle the cows, feed them, and circumambulate them. If you always please the cows, Krishna will be pleased. Eager to obtain forgiveness of Krishna, who has great affection for the cows, you must serve the mother of cows, Sarabi, and if you do not, she will side with the demons. Afraid of the demons, Indra went to Sarabi's planet and pleased Sarabi repeatedly, though she was disturbed when he explained his offense. He returned to Brahma with Sarabi, and Brahma said, O Sarabi, go to Krishna in order to remove Indra's fear. Remove the bad name of Indra, who is called having, quote, having bad conduct in the assembly of learned people. Make Goloka visible in the material world with your wealth of cows, which makes Vaikuntha seem limited. Krishna will attain the position of the king of Goloka if you bathe him and serve him. So then she went with Indra, and they went to see Krishna. Krishna is sitting on a white cloth spread on the gems of Govardhan. His left hand is placed on his lotus foot, resting on his left thigh. And his right hand holds his most beautiful, the flute. With a smiling glance, it seems he showers mercy. He is willing to meet us. And he has sent his friends away on errands. It is certain that Balaram has not come today. Now go in front of him with grieving heart when no one is there and offer respects and please him. The person of superior power unto whom the offense has been committed and who can remove the offense rarely sees the miserable offender. If one offers respects to the person offended in a private place, one's miserable state will invoke the mercy of even an ordinary person, what to speak of an elevated person. I will approach later to make some special request. Following Sarabi's instructions, Indra approached Krishna in private and fell at his feet. When Indra offered respects, Krishna's toenails shone brilliantly among Indra's crown jewels. When Indra's lotus eyes began to flow with tears like honey, Krishna's two nails became like moon. When he wept, Krishna, being a little taken aback, raised him up with his hand and affectionately spoke to him. This is Krishna speaking. Oh Lord, do not do such unsuitable acts. You are the only shelter of all the words of the wise. When he placed his hands on Indra's head, shamed Indra remained silent as if struck by a thunderbolt. Who will not become a devotee of that person who is strong and affectionate and can bind another's body by his power and his mind by his words? Such a nice statement about Krishna. He binds us with his power and by his words he binds our minds. Krishna's power and affection influenced Indra. Acting like the moon on others, Krishna acted like the sun on Indra, and Indra acted like the sun on others. But he acted like a firefly in front of Krishna. When Indra was silent, Krishna remained mute. And when Indra began praising him, Krishna became eloquent. No one can describe how Indra spoke when praising Krishna, O Nanda. Controlling himself, Krishna is becoming shy in front of you. Not noticing his disregard, Indra then concluded, My dear Lord, when my sacrifice was disrupted, I became fiercely angry with my false pride. Thus I tried to destroy your cowherd community with severe rain and wind. Smiling, Krishna said, My dear Indra, It was out of my mercy that I stopped the sacrifice meant for you. Remembering me, you should not surpass the best of devotees like my father. If the devatas become proud of their opulence, the Brahmins will become proud of eating fish. O Indra, I will uproot your enemies. Why do you fear me? Please act properly. So, in this way, there was an exchange between Krishna and Indra, a very loving and deep, heartfelt exchange, where Krishna was encouraging Indra, and he was forgiving him very easily and openly. And then when Krishna, Sarabi was approached, she approached Krishna, she offered respects as a cow, he smiled. And folding his hands in reverence, Krishna spoke, O mother, why have you come? Though desiring to give all blessings, she could not do so. She said, My species has become very fortunate. They have come to earth to do service to you. I am not fortunate since I cannot see you. However, you are the killer of demons and the protector of the planets, and I shall also dwell on these planets. You are naturally my master. So it's getting late here, but she says many wonderful prayers. And she's bathing Lord Krishna with her tears and with her milk. And she even requests Krishna's permission to bathe him with some of this milk and water from the Ganges, the sacred river of heaven, so that the milk from her udder does not become utterly useless. Krishna said, "Do as you please." So then Airavata brings these Ganges water from the heavenly planets in a jeweled pot, and Sarabhi fills up Indra Sarovara near the Govardhan Mountain with milk. And Indra, with strong bhakti in his heart, along with his relatives and the protector of direction, bathed Krishna while Gandharvas danced and the sages uttered mantras, and Brahma and Shiva shouted, "Victory, victory," in bliss. By this, they all bathed in the nectar of happiness. So that will go on more in this upcoming verses, how the demigods now come to worship Krishna. So I just wanted to share those different activities of Krishna and the cows, so our meditation on Krishna and the cows and their relationships can become more focused and deep. Does anyone have any questions or comments or additions? Yes, Priva Kram.
So, 5,000 years in the past, not just transitional years also, but the world has become so deplorable. I mean, practically there's more than 80, probably 90% of the people are killing the cows. I mean, within such a short time, it's incomprehensible.
Well, this is, why is that happening? Why are so many people so degraded in this age? Because there are so many sinful living entities that have been waiting to take their birth, and this is their time. This is the time when they are meant to come and exhibit their proclivities, their interests, their desires. So they can, just like in the history of the universe, there are certain times when the demons become prominent and other times when the demigods become prominent. So also in this time, those who are not followers of the Vedic instructions, they also become more and more prominent. Yes.
For the nice class, it was wonderful. So we hear these cows are actually great mystics coming, and even today, I have a nice book about stories of cows. One is where I was a cow in a devotee goshala, and when it was leaving its body, there was a beautiful painting of Radha and Krishna, and the cow was on the other side of the goshala, and it struggled to walk all the way to the painting and paid obeisances and then left its body. So, but we hear in Sastra that the animals cannot understand God. That's the human form of life. We can actually develop a relationship and understand God. So, how is this? Is this different with cows?
Well, actually, it's feasible, especially with direct contact with Krishna and Krishna's devotees, that anyone in Krishna's holy name can revive some consciousness. It may not be quite the same format as we may, as human beings. They certainly won't be able to have philosophical discussions. But the sentiment within the heart is the same for all living entities. That loving devotion is able to manifest, especially when they are treated in association with devotees with care and love, and they can offer their milk to Krishna.
Hare Krishna. I have a response to Mathura's question. I mean, it's not a definitive answer, it's just another anecdote. I had gone to Honolulu to hear from Srila Prabhupada, and I was staying in somebody's house. This woman was house-sitting, and I was staying with her. So the people of the house had a cat, and the cat caught a lizard. And so I tried to save the lizard from the cat, and it was still alive, but it was just like on the verge of death. So I had put up posters of Radha and Krishna in the house. I was petting this lizard and tending to it and putting it in front of the picture, and it was just like, you know, half dead. And all of a sudden it kind of woke up, and it had big, big eyes, and it was looking right at the poster. And its heart started beating. I could feel it. And I thought, he really looks like he's looking at the poster. So I thought, nah, he's not really looking at Radha and Krishna. So I moved my hand this way, and his head's like that. And I moved my hand this way, and his head's like that. He was looking right at Radha and Krishna. So I just put him down. He got a new life and ran away. There's exceptions to the rule.
Anyone else? Thank you. All glories to Srimad Bhagavatam, all glories to Srila Prabhupada.
Hi, Bob, just a short announcement. If anybody sees a bright blue bead bag, there was one hanging in the big kitchen, and it's gone now. And it's my bead bag, Nartaka Gopal. If you look